Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you this week from Longmont, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. There's been a lot of news recently about stock prices falling and investors being concerned, along with a lot of uncertainty in general. I talked about the value of having an investment policy statement to guide you during turbulent times recently in episode 40, which I'll put in the links there. But in this episode, I wanted to dive a little bit deeper and discuss market valuation and how to go about doing that. Before we get into how to value the market or stocks. But let's back up a bit first and ask, what does it mean to be a shareholder? Well, you are an owner of that company. If you buy some shares, you own a tiny sliver of that company, as opposed to a bondholder where you are a lender. You're lending money to either a company or the government in the form of treasuries, and you expect interest in return. As a shareholder, you are an owner. You own a sliver of that company's assets and your share of its earnings in perpetuity as long as you own those shares. There is no maturity date on stocks, for example, whereas there is a maturity date on bonds. So that's a significant difference. Now, as a shareholder, you are entitled to, like I said, the assets of the company if it were to liquidate. But more specifically, a portion of those earnings, your share of that company's earnings, the way companies will distribute those earnings over time is a couple of ways. One is they may pay a dividend. Typically, it would be paid quarterly, and that's a return of some of the earnings that are paid out to the shareholders. They may also repurchase shares so they can go into the open market and buy shares. And as a result, if you continue to own your shares, you now have a slightly larger percentage ownership of that company as a result of that activity. And then many companies will also choose to retain a bulk or potentially all of those earnings to reinvest in the company's operations, with the objective of growing those earnings in the future. So that's what it means to be a shareholder. So then a way to measure or value what you're paying for that company is to compare the price you would need to pay to buy those shares to the earnings that company can generate. You could do it over a period of time. You could say, I estimate the earnings for this company to be XYZ over the next infinite number of years, discount it back at an appropriate interest rate to determine the value. That's what's called intrinsic value. But today we're going to talk about kind of an easier metric that we can all put our fingers on at ease. And that is the price to earnings ratio. So the price to earnings ratio is simply calculated by taking the stock price, or in the case of owning an index fund, you could take the price of the index and compare it to, if it's an individual company, that company's earnings for a one-year period, or if it's an index, the earnings of the entire index for a one-year period. That's typically what you're doing. You're looking at a 12-month period of time. Most people will look backwards to the historical earnings, so the trailing 12-month earnings, or some people may use estimated earnings to determine what they think the earnings will be going forward using analyst estimates. The problem with that is analysts typically are very optimistic, so I like to look at trailing earnings because it's a known value. So let's look at the S&P 500. That is the 500 largest companies by value. It also is very similar to what the total stock market would be if you had a total index fund, but S&P figures are readily available and also go back very far in time. So it's a good metric to use to determine the market's valuation. So as of Friday, that would be yesterday in this case, March 28th, the S&P 500 closed at 5,580.94. The trailing 12-month reported earnings, so through December 31st, 2024, we will be getting first quarter earnings soon, but they won't come out for a few more weeks. So we will look at the trailing 12-month earnings as of December 31st, 2024. They were $210.11. There's also something called operating earnings per share, which were $233.29. Operating earnings exclude the impacts of things like accumulated accounting charges, discontinued operations, extraordinary items, and special items. We're going to focus on reported earnings. I'm going to show you some graphs if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're listening, you may want to consider jumping over to the YouTube channel because I will be illustrating a lot of information with graphs. So if we look at the PE ratio, price to earnings ratio, as of Friday, March 28th, 2025, all we need to do is take the price of the S&P 500, that 5,580.94, and divide it by the reported earnings per share over the last 12 months, which goes through December 31st, 2024, and that's $210.11. To calculate a PE ratio of 26.6. One way to think about that is it would take you 26.6 years of earnings, assuming zero growth, which, you know, most companies do grow their earnings over time, but assuming a 0% growth to earn back your investment. That's another way to think about it. I like to think about it in the inverse. And I will get to this later as to why, but let's just quickly calculate what is called the earnings yield. So this is basically taking those same two figures, reported earnings per share of $210 and change, and the closing price of $5,580 and change, but doing the calculation in reverse, taking the earnings divided by the price. If we do that, we get a percentage, and currently that would be 3.76%. Keep that in your memory bank, and we will get back to that. Now that we've calculated this PE ratio, we're looking at 26.6. What does this mean? Well, the best thing to do is look at it in a historical context. Where is this now today relative to where it has been in the past, to give us some framework for, is this a high number? Is this a low number? Where are we on this? So this is where charts are going to start coming into play. What's interesting is I was doing the research for this episode, and I was anticipating having to create a lot of charts and kind of formulate a lot of this in a summary fashion. And I did some Googling to find out if there were some charts already made. And I stumbled across a website, which I think is very interesting, very valuable for all of this information. It's called currentmarketvaluation.com. And I will link to that in the show notes. So many of these charts are going to come from that website. And it looks at multiple valuation models, P ratio model, the earnings rate model, mean reversion model, earnings yield gap, Buffett indicator, things like that. We're going to talk about a few of those, but it's a really interesting website. I think it's very well done, and it gives you an idea of where valuations stand today relative to various factors. So let's jump into chart one, and that is just simply looking at the PE ratio over time. And what we will see, or what you will see in this chart, if you're looking at it on YouTube, is that today's PE ratio, now this chart is as of December 31st, 2024. The website updates information quarterly. I think there's a paid version where you can get it more frequently, but I am looking at the free version, and you can see that it, looking at the chart, it was nearly 30 times earnings at the end of last year. Now that is now down to 26.6 because the market has gone down about 10% from its high this year, or about 6% from year end. And so the P/E ratio is a little lower. But if you're looking at this chart, you will see it's at the higher end of where it has been historically. And again, if you're looking on YouTube, you will see that there are some very substantial increases during recessions, as you might expect. The market may go down during a recession, but earnings may go down more, so the P/E ratio goes up a lot. So an individual named Robert Shiller came up with an alternative way of looking at price-to-earnings ratios, and it's called the cyclically adjusted price-earnings ratio, or CAPE ratio. And basically what that means is it smooths out the earning volatility. So what it's doing is looking at the average earnings over the past 10 years, which smooths out kind of those spikes that occur during recessions. So I will pull that chart up for you, and you will see the cyclically adjusted PE ratio. It doesn't have those significant spikes, but what you can see, again, this is looking back at the average 10 years of earnings relative to the current price, you can see, again, we are at a very high level historically. In fact, the only higher level was a brief period in, looks like, 2022, and also in the 2000s during the internet bubble. But again, it's at a very high factor. And on this chart, you can see as of December 31st, the CAPE ratio is 36.8. So what does this mean? What it means is that prices are high relative to a historical basis, but it's also without a lot of context. It's just looking at the PE ratio. Now, before I jump ahead, I do want to show you another chart for those of you who are statisticians, but also for anyone to kind of look at, is looking at that same CAPE ratio chart relative to history and dividing it into standard deviations. So what that basically means is deviation from the average or the mean. Typically, markets are volatile and they will fit within one standard deviation. And once you start to get outside of those bands, you can start to see how far above or potentially below the normal distribution curve these figures are. So just a quick kind of recap, especially for those that aren't looking at this on the screen, you can see that the CAPE ratio was quite outside of its standard deviation, both during the internet bubble, was as many as 3 standard deviations away from the mean. And currently, it's 2 standard deviations away from the mean, which means it's significantly overvalued looking at it from the CAPE ratio perspective. But I also like to look at things based on, well, what is an alternative to stocks, for example? Well, as you may know, you could always buy a treasury bond, note, or bill. And most people, when you're looking at valuations for the stock market, we'll look at something like the 10-year treasury yield. The reason the 10-year is chosen is that is similar to what a holding period for a stock investor would be, and it also smooths out or disregards some of the volatility that can occur in the shorter end of the yield curve and subject to changes in Fed funds rate and things like that. We won't get into that, but just trust me on the fact that you typically would look at the 10-year treasury yield as a comparison to what you could invest in alternatively in the stock market, for example. So let's look at the 10-year treasury right now. So if we pull up that chart, and again, if you're watching on YouTube, you will see that the 10-year treasury yield as of Friday, March 28th, 2025, is currently 4.27%. And if you're watching on YouTube, you will see a chart of the history of the U.S. Treasury interest rates, the 10-year treasury. And you can see it was as high as 16% way back in the 80s. and has basically steadily been declining all the way up until the early 2020s, 2021. And interest rates got pretty close to zero, as a matter of fact. And today they've backtracked. They're now four and change, but that's still pretty low from a historical basis. So it's not unusual that you would have an alternative investment like stocks become more expensive or their PE ratios expand if the alternative investment yield opportunity was declining over the years. But that's since reversed. So now we need to look at, well, where do we stand today? Well, this is where we go back to that calculation of the S&P 500 earnings yield we did a little bit earlier. Right now, as I said, the current 10-year treasury yield is 4.27%, and the S&P 500 earnings yield, so earnings divided by price, is 3.76%, which means that the 10-year treasury is offering about a half a percentage more in yield than the S&P 500 index. Typically, if you look at history, and I'm going to bring up one more chart here, if we compare the S&P 500 earnings yield to the 10-year treasury yield, you will see historically it has been, on average, a positive gap of about 0.27%, meaning that stocks' earnings yield exceeded the treasury yield. Kind of makes sense. You're going to be taking a little bit more risk in owning stocks, certainly from a volatility perspective. You should be compensated for it. However, there is one caveat to consider, and that is if you buy a 10-year treasury, that interest rate is fixed for the life of the term of that loan, which is effectively 10 years. So you'll get that same 4.27% each and every year for 10 years on your original investment. Whereas if you own a stock, that earnings historically has gone up on average, certainly can go down, but that earnings yield would likely over time expand to increase. So the earnings will increase over time, and based on your original stock price, that yield will increase. So it makes sense that you're being compensated for your risk in investing in stocks by an increasing earnings yield over time as well. So anyway, if we look at it historically, you can see it on this graph here. It's basically the difference between the S&P 500 earnings yield and the 10-year treasury yield, in essence called a yield spread. And whenever it's significantly negative, that would imply that stocks are overvalued relative to treasuries. And when it's significantly positive, stocks would be undervalued relative to 10-year treasuries. And if you're looking at this chart in the YouTube channel, you can see that there were three significant periods where stocks were undervalued, i.e. they had a much higher earnings yield than 10-year treasuries. And that was in 1975. That was a major bear market that caused that. Same with late 70s. And also in 2010 through 11, again, big market decline. Today, you can see that the spread is negative relative to its positive 27%, or about 0.78 percentage points past the average. So what does this mean in standard deviation? Well, if we look at one more chart here, you will see that it doesn't look as bad as just looking at the PE ratio standalone, which was significantly overvalued based on historical data, and same with the CAPE ratio. But because interest rates, while they are slightly higher today than very recently, they still are very low historically, you can see that we're still within about one standard deviation. So it is slightly overvalued based on this analysis, but not as significantly overvalued based on the other two approaches. So I just wanted to show you a few things or a few ways to look at stocks from a valuation perspective, I think a lot of people just look at the number, the price of the index, without looking at, well, what are we paying for? And then maybe they'll hear, oh, the PE ratio is high. What does that mean? Well, like I said, I like to look at it from the standpoint of earnings yield, so the inverse, and then comparing it to the alternative. Now, with 10-year treasuries or even 3-month treasuries are yielding about the same, it's a pretty attractive alternative to potentially own treasuries in lieu of equities. So that would be a reason for hesitation on some investors' part to, say, back up the truck just because the stock market went down a little bit here recently. So I wanted to give you some perspective as to maybe how to look at markets from a valuation perspective. Some people I've seen online, because they haven't been in the markets for a long time, are like, oh, the market's down 10%. This is a huge buying opportunity. Well, the reality is that a 10% decline in the market is usually a fairly common occurrence. In fact, it frequently occurs as many as 3 times a year. We just haven't seen one of these drawdowns in recent history. So a lot of people think, oh my God, this is either a big deal and something to really worry about, or it is this huge buying opportunity. I would say really neither is the case. Let's back up, look at where valuations are. Valuations, well, better now with the market being off 10% approximately from its high, are still high, but they're not as high as maybe they were a few months ago, but they're not super cheap either. So this brings me to another insight, I guess you would say. And I was talking about this with somebody in one of the groups I'm in, and he reminded me of a comment that Warren Buffett made in his chairman's letter. Now, Warren Buffett issues a chairman's letter every year. The 2024 letter, which is released in 2025, will be coming out in a few weeks here. But this one goes back to 1987. And I think it's very important for people to really understand this kind of logic that he laid out here. And especially for, I would say, the layperson who may not be as well versed in how markets work and how you should view prices in the market. And I thought this was a really interesting way to summarize it. Thank you to the individual who brought this to my attention. I was aware of it. I didn't know where it was. And he said, oh, it's in the 1997 letter. And I will link to that in the show notes. And if you scroll down a little ways, you'll see a section highlighted called How We Think About Market Fluctuations. It's relatively short. I'm going to read just 3 short paragraphs that I think summarize all of this very well. So here we go. This is what it says in the letter. Quote, a short quiz. If you plan to eat hamburgers throughout your life and are not a cattle producer, should you wish for higher or lower prices for beef? Likewise, if you are going to buy a car from time to time but are not an auto manufacturer, should you prefer higher or lower car prices? These questions, of course, answer themselves. But now for the final exam. If you expect to be a net saver during the next 5 years, should you hope for a higher or lower stock market during that period? Many investors get this one wrong, even though they are going to be net buyers of stocks for many years to come. They are elated when stock prices rise and depressed when they fall. In effect, they rejoice because prices have risen for the hamburgers they will soon be buying. This reaction makes no sense. Only those who will be sellers of equities in the near future should be happy at seeing stocks rise. Prospective purchasers should much prefer sinking prices. And I go down a few more paragraphs, and he says, so smile when you read a headline that says, investors lose as market falls. Edit it in your mind to Disinvestors lose as market falls, but investors gain. Though writers often forget this truism, there is a buyer for every seller, and what hurts one necessarily helps the other. As they say in golf matches, every putt makes someone happy. And I will end it there, and you can go and read the whole piece. But that is the summary of it, and I think that's so true. Someone asked me recently, did owning stocks during the lost decade, and that refers to the decade between 2000 and 2010, where stock prices didn't go anywhere, did that set me back on my path to financial independence? And I said, you know, actually, it helped. And they're like, huh? The market didn't do anything for 10 years. How could it have helped you? And I said, I was accumulating shares during that entire period. I would much rather have the market go nowhere or potentially even down during a period than have it go up where all of my additional contributions were buying fewer shares at higher prices. So in fact, being an accumulator during that lost decade and then subsequently having markets go up after that actually benefited me instead of hurt me. And they thought, huh, I never really thought of it that way. And that's exactly what Warren Buffett is saying here in this letter. So what does that mean for investors today? All of this that we've just talked about. Does that mean we should run out and sell stocks? Does it mean we should run out and buy stocks? Should we buy treasury bills? What should we do? Well, I would invite you to go back to episode 40 and listen to the investment policy statement discussions. So in conclusion, I would leave it with this. Stocks are not super cheap right now, even with the recent correction that we've seen, again, kind of run-of-the-mill 10% stock market decline. But for the long-term investor, this is something to be kind of happy about and not be afraid of. You should want these prices to come down. You should want valuations to come down if you're a net purchaser. Now, for those in the distribution phase, even though stock prices are about 10% off their highs, I would say if you don't have enough cash runway for near-term expenditures, it may not be a bad idea to raise some resources to make sure you have that cash runway. Even though prices are off their peak, they're still relatively expensive when you're looking at it from the perspective that we just went through. So I think that's kind of the best way to think about it. I hope this little kind of dissertation, I guess you would say, on valuation was helpful. This is something I go through with my students a little bit. I know some of my students might be out there listening. So this is a little bit deeper of a dive, but this is a way to look at your ownership of equities, whether it be individual equities or in an index fund, which is probably preferable, to understand what is the valuation or how do I value what I own? And is this a good time? Is this a time to, as they say, back up the truck? Well, if you see extremes, like we saw in that 2009 to 10, 11 period, or if you were around like I was during the internet bubble when valuations got very low, those are the times to, yeah, maybe figure out how you can save a little bit more and maybe put some of that money to work. But I would say today's not that time, but I would say that if you're a regular investor, I wouldn't be afraid to continue to making those contributions as you always have. And don't let the news freak you out. That's what newspapers are good at. They're fear-mongers that sells articles. You'll see all kinds of stuff. Oh my God, the market's down. Again, turn it around and say, the market's down. Great. I'm happy. I'm a net investor. This is good news. Instead of, oh my God, what should I do? Should I sell everything? I've heard too many people talk about that lately. Should I sell everything and go to cash? And great. Do that, then you got to decide when to go back in. Doesn't work. I've never met anyone who has been any good at predicting where the stock market is going to go in the short term once, much less multiple times in their investing career. So I wouldn't say that's a good approach to investing. Anyway, hope this was an episode you enjoyed, and I will hopefully have a few more of these educational kind of podcasts in the future. But for now, enjoy your week, and I will see you if you're watching on YouTube, or you will hear me if you're listening on a podcast on the next episode. Have a great week. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you'd like to remain anonymous, and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. Now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.